You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found that 12 fractional ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Homarg, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the big marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced that I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. This got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Where the party go hell? Out in the St. John's swamps.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello out there. Another week has passed, and a lot of information has come through from all over the country. Not the information that we've been looking for. Once again, I want to apologize for the technical difficulties that we've been having the last couple of weeks. I thought we'd been over this, but maybe it'll take us another 7 days to get this thing resolved also. Been super busy doing our other things out in the field, with the company. Bill, I think we're getting.
Yeah, we're okay now.
I hope so.
Okay. We're all right. Go ahead.
All right, good. All right. So, you know, we've all gone through these triple-digit temperatures across the country, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard me talk about it each and every week. These poor creatures, their inner clocks have been totally off. Have no clue what's going on. That's okay, because the true and real Bigfoot researchers don't get detoured. They keep their minds business. You know, we've got some of the, probably the best guys on that I know of, I've met throughout the years. We've got Scott Marlowe down there in Florida. We've got Don Monroe on with us tonight. Hales from Lima, Montana, but he's all over the map. We're going to be talking with him tonight. We've got so many people. But I'll tell you what, there's no more than these two guys that I respect, as I respect a lot of people in this industry. These two guys pick up the slack, all the bogus and all the bullshit that's out there. These guys are the real deal, okay? So without any further ado, I want to get out there to Florida. My good buddy Scott Marlowe from Pangea Institute out there in Florida, he's just came back on his expedition. And I might add that it's been quite fruitful for him. And we're going to be hooking up with him here not too shortly and find out exactly what's been going on. So without any further ado, let's go out there to Florida and bring Scott Marlowe on with us. Scott, you out there?
I'm here, Tom.
How you feeling, good buddy? I know that you've gone through all that crap between the weather and the humidity and the rains in the afternoon and the swamps, and I know that your health hasn't been top draw, but you've at least been out there, man. That's the thing that blows my mind about you. You know, you're like that old mule hoeing that field out there, you know, with you, trying to get that carrot, and you'll do whatever it takes to make that run down that field. Tell me what happened. How long were you gone, by the way?
We've gone a week and did the preliminary work. I got a couple of calls from some state park rangers. I get kind of antsy about it because every time the rangers call me and their higher-ups in Tallahassee find out, they wind up getting reassigned or tossed off the employment list. So I'm trying to keep it quiet, but we did a couple of interviews. And we know that there's some things going on up there from what we've seen. At this stage, we're ready to start doing some additional work.
Wonderful. As a matter of fact, you know, since you and I have talked, I have done put some feelers out in that area, which we're not going to talk about, but we can talk about generalities. And there is action going on as we speak. As a matter of fact, a couple of my guys down in that area were telling me tonight, just about 40 minutes ago, 35 minutes ago now, and was telling me about the footprints that they had discovered. I want to ask you something. They were telling me that they saw a four-toed creature. Is that familiar with you at all?
I've seen some tracks that have unusual numbers of digits. Most of them are obviously hoaxed tracks. Others, it looks like there's an injured animal that may have had a toe rot off or something along those lines from some sort of an infection, something I'm very familiar with, in as much as I've almost lost a toe due to an infection myself. So it gets kind of dangerous out there sometimes. You can pick up some really weird bugs.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because there's a new strain now of wood ticks. I don't know if you've heard about it. They don't even have anything to fight the disease. Now, I just heard about this on Monday, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And it came from, the south, the southeast area, too. And they were telling me that there's this new strain of wood tick that's out there, and they don't have anything to fight it.
Well, there's some bacteria out there that's become highly resistant to even the most up-to-date of the antibiotics. I know I have one right now, and we're fighting it tooth and nail. And most likely I picked it up on expedition. But, that's the risk you take when you do the work, and it's all part of the job.
You are so right. It blows my mind, you know. I mean, you, myself, people like Don Monroe and there are a few others out there, and it just totally blows me away at times. You know, I was out this, I'm out now, and it just blows me away. On I worry about my feet as well as you do with yours. You know, a lot of people have diabetes, and I don't happen to have diabetes, but the terrain that we traverse sometimes is very difficult, okay? And people don't realize that, if, depending on how big your toes are and if you haven't had them cut, the nails and between the calluses and the blisters and everything else you've got, you're opened up for a large infection here.
Well, I mean, every military guy knows that you got to take care of your feet, change your socks frequently, and I mean all of that stuff, keep your feet dry. Most bacteria and fungus just love a warm, dark, moist environment. And obviously in the tropics, you've got that problem.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's some of the lands that I can't stand, is the tropics. Well, listen, tell me what's been going on down there. Have you guys seen any tracks?
Yeah, there's tracks. There's branch breaks. The usual, sign is definitely there. There have not been any sightings or credible video work yet, although we've got some stuff out there now, and I'm waiting to see what kind of results we get. But there's been quite a bit of activity all over the state. There's been a lot of hullabaloo about a sighting by a fishing guide and a couple of his people out in Merritt Island. I don't have a boatload of confidence, so to speak, in that particular sighting, because Merritt Island is so well traveled, and of course that's the site of the Kennedy Space Center. And there's lots of activity there all the time. I don't think the animals would tend to stay in that kind of a vicinity, but it is possible that there are escaped primates there that are not necessarily our big hairy friend. And we do have monkeys and other types of smaller primates, even chimps, running around Florida, although the State Wildlife Commission doesn't want you to know that. So, God knows what they've seen, if they saw anything at all, swimming around out there. And, it's a common misconception that chimpanzees are afraid of water. They aren't. So, they can't swim.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I was told this year, especially when it comes to these boas, these snakes, that there is such a congestion of these things now that they're coming out of the swamps and they're going into people's backyards.
Yeah, very much so, and it's particularly true of south of Orlando. We haven't really had a big problem with it other than pet snakes escaping. Of course, the snake that killed the baby in the crib was pretty much in my backyard. That made national news. But that was a pet snake. And you do have to kind of be careful with reptiles. One of my foster kids is a reptile fanatic and has several snakes. And he also has a baby, but they make sure that the snake is kept in a very locked container and far away from the kid. But it's really, really difficult to deal with some of the things that are happening. You know, everybody talks about the boas, but we have other snakes down here, too, that are equally dangerous or more so. One of my buddies, Bob Freer, runs an animal rescue facility outside the Everglades, and he has two king cobras that were captured in the Everglades.
Is that right?
Yep.
Wow. You know, it's amazing to see what the heck is going on. Somebody was telling me that there's something like 15,000, the numbers are staggering, of these boas ranging anywhere from 6 to 18 feet that were pets at one time. People couldn't handle them, and they just let them loose out there in the Everglades and in the swamp.
Well, you've got the exotic pet issue, and that's true, but even more nefarious is a lot of these animals are considered dangerous, and they're difficult to import. They're also somewhat territorial. So what you wind up with is nefarious people who want to sell these reptiles, letting them go deliberately so they reproduce, going out and picking them up so they don't have to declare them. And they've created a monster, so to speak, with these exotic animals. And then the snakes are not the only ones. We've got Nile monitor lizards roaming around down there. We've got Gaboon rats roaming around in the Keys. I mean, it is absolutely unbelievable what's going on here. And it's really become a major problem for the state wildlife people. Particularly in this economy, dedicating the resources necessary to fight it is unbelievable.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. I can understand the reason why also. And then I understand that they have I guess it's called the venomous animal staff or venomous snake staff. I forget the name of it. But and that's all these guys do, and there's four of them in this one county region, and my God, they're busy 7 days a week.
Well, you know, think about the people who have to keep the antivenom. I mean, sometimes it's not that easy to get it.
Exactly.
So, roaming around out there in the woods is not for the faint-hearted anymore. You really don't know what you're going to run into. And as far as the snakes are concerned, I've even, been questioning a park ranger down there in the Everglades who's telling me, no, there's no problem. It's not really that bad. It's the media is making it worse as he stepped on one.
Oh, Jesus. Is that right?
Yeah, mahogany hammock there in the Everglades. We were off the boardwalk, and he literally stepped on a boa.
Yeah, see, it's getting to staggering amounts now out there. I got to tell you something. At the top of the hour when we were talking, you were talking to me about one of those fishermen. Well, I got to tell you something. When I met you about 7 years ago, we were out there, and I'm trying to think. Was it 10,000 Islands that they call it?
Yeah, that's where you were, and
yeah.
That area is probably prime swamp ape territory.
Well, let me tell you one of the you just brought back a light went off, a light bulb went off in my head when you mentioned that. One of the reasons why we went down there was because a fisherman had seen one of these creatures chasing a deer that was swimming across from island to island.
Yeah.
And he was shocked, and he turned his boat around. He didn't have any way, his two-way radio didn't work, and he didn't have a cell phone to go back and call the fish and game people because he was shocked to see what he saw.
Yeah, and there have been commercial fishermen that have seen families of swamp apes swimming between the islands down there, and they're highly credible reports.
That is just totally amazing. Let me ask you something. Now with winter coming up, fall and winter, do you think we'll be seeing a lot more evidence down there?
Probably. I mean, I'm fairly convinced that the animals migrate, and they head north in the summer months to Ocala National Forest and beyond. Using particular waterways and on both the eastern and the western side of the state. They may go even further up. They may go as far as the Okefenokee. There are pathways that they could do that. But I don't hear too much, other than the Glen St. Mary's incident a couple years ago, I don't hear too much going up on that corridor. But we get sightings seasonally all over the Ocala National Forest, and then they seem to move south and north with the seasons coming through certain areas. You were, in the Green Swamp, which is one of those areas, back in March, or was that May? Excuse me, it was May. And that's one of the areas that they traverse, but it has become so infested with, quote, Bigfoot hunters, unquote. You know what I mean? And we've got jokers out there playing bull elephant calls, trying to do the call blasting stuff. And I mean, it's really gotten so comical. I don't think they come through there as much as they used to.
I really am, because it's so comical. All right, it really is. Marco, Bill, and I were talking today, and we're just so tired, and we just let it, it's like chip off the old block, It's just like with you. You've got so much knowledge. You've got so much tenure in this industry, and, the people come, they're like leeches, and they try to just come and bleed you dry, and they don't realize the time, the effort, and the money that you put in to get where you are today, okay?
And well, all education is hard-earned, Tom, and sometimes it's the school of hard knocks, and sometimes it's, somebody gets into it as a hobby and it becomes a passion, and that's good, but there's a certain amount of training necessary to do the job right. And, of course, all this DNA stuff that everybody's talking about right now is proof of that pudding, because so many people think it's simple, and it's not. It's very complicated.
And you're exactly right, because I'll never forget when I first got into that, and of course, you know, where I went. I went to you, and of course, you did your due diligence and turned me on to the right places to get it done the right way. And what was that word that you used, or the sentence, the terminology, something, the line of identity or something? What was it called?
Chain of custody.
Chain of custody. That's it. You know, I don't believe that the people out there understand what that really means. You know, all these people, you know, think that, okay, here, I've got some sample. I've got some hair samples, okay? Or I have a piece of meat that was tore off a body. Well, let's just go there and bring it. They have no clue. And then they all think it's done for free, see?
Well, it's thousands of dollars to do DNA tests of the type you're talking about. I think the very cheapest I've ever heard is just less than $1,000 for a reliable test. The equipment required is not the kind of thing that the average Joe, even with a laboratory, is going to have. If it's done manually, the possibility of mistakes is unbelievable. Because every time you put the human element into it, there's another possibility of an error. And of course, if you don't have any solid evidence as to how the sample was obtained and handled, which is what the chain of custody does, you invalidate anything you find.
You bet, yeah. And that's the whole problem. You know, people just do not realize it. You know, there's a lot of people that run off the mouth. Boy, we've encountered a bunch of them, and we ran. You know, there was a guy. Maybe you know him. I met him many, many years ago, and he's still living. I think he's about 83 years old. Peter Byrne. Remember Peter Byrne?
I know Peter fairly well. He's been on my show a few times.
Okay. Well, Peter is a great guy, and to not to waste his time, and to quote Peter, as the people come up and say that they're Bigfoot researchers and Bigfoot hunters and they're out there looking for Bigfoot, he looks at them square straight in the face and says, well, what have you documented in the Bigfoot field that I can go and pull up on the computer or go to a library and pick or go and see in a movie? And when they all come back and say, well, nothing, but I know this guy and I know that guy, he says, that's my whole point. Really, I don't have time for you. Please go on to the next guy.
Well, I mean, I've got pictures of myself with a half a dozen presidents. That didn't make me vice president.
Exactly. Point well taken, okay?
Yep.
But when I heard him say that, okay, it blew me away. And I says, you know what? He's right. So when I see all these people trying to capitalize on the work that you've done, I've done, other people, you know, our predecessors in this field, and they all think they know it all. They all think that they can take that big, giant step from zero to 100 overnight, okay? It doesn't happen that way, does it?
No, this reminds me of the scene around the dinner table in Jurassic Park, the original movie. They're having the very same argument. You know, you stand on the shoulder of giants and you want to patent it and put it on a lunchbox, yada, yada, yada. You know, that's great, but because there's no effort made to obtain the knowledge, there's no responsibility in its use.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head. Well, I'll tell you what.
I didn't. Spielberg did. But,
exactly.
You know. But that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that there's not a place for people who, you know, want to go monster hunting out there in the world. But there's a point at which you got to realize your limitations and step aside and let somebody knows what they're doing get in the picture and do what is necessary to do. Because frankly, I think there's been a lot of really classic evidence that could have been well used and would have been much better established to document the existence of these creatures. But it's been muffed by ham-handed amateurs who don't know what they're doing with the evidence.
Whitey, you have you hit that right on the head. You know, I got to tell you something. Just to switch gears just for a second. You know, I've in the last 3 days, I must have received, I think there was five or six emails stating that, Hey, Tom, I understand that you and Adrian Erickson are in cahoots with each other. And I said, well, I have no clue where this is coming from, but I know nothing about it. And then in the same paragraph on the email, it says, well, apparently he's gone broke and his wife won't give him any more money or won't allow him to invest any more money in the projects. Are you and he going to, you know, collaborate on what's going on to get all this stuff out? And I says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no clue. And have you heard anything about that?
No, but what you're describing sounds, you know what noodling is?
Well, I know what canoodling is when you go fishing for a 30-pound catfish in the mud.
Yeah, well, you got to feel around and you can't see what's going on and you grab it by the fin, try to yank it out of the water, right?
That's exactly it.
Well, it sounds to me like somebody's trying to noodle you.
Yeah.
They want to find out what your reaction would be so that they can carry it back to the other party and say, hey, somebody's willing to back you. Why don't you go with them? That type of manipulation goes on in this field so dang much it's almost nauseating.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, listen, gosh, it's great to always hear from you and hear, you know, your two cents of what's happening in your neck of the woods. And, oh, by the way, I'm just going to wait for the call, and then you know what's going to happen. I'll be there with you and the guys. And, listen, I got Don Monroe coming out. Just mute yourself out. He's going to talk about a new species of snake that he's been searching for, and he got a couple of them. So just mute yourself out, okay?
I'll do that.
Thanks, good buddy.
Take care.
Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, good friend, great guy, probably one of the, if not the most scholared cryptozoologist. Listen to what I'm telling you. Scholared cryptozoologist in the world today, bar none. Nobody could shine this man's shoes, in my opinion. Scott Marlowe is top drawer. Another good friend, ladies and gentlemen. Talked to him today. Talked to him recently also when he was out there hunting this new species of snake. You've seen him in our movie in the...
Town, do you want to do a commercial?
What I want you to do is welcome my good friend, another researcher, Don Monroe. Don, you out there?
Hello there. Yeah.
Tom? Hey, buddy. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I don't know if I get through or not. I'm down here in California, and my girlfriend's actually dying as I speak. I'm in the family, with some family here in the next few days. And prayers for her would be good. I just, anything in general, but she's been a researcher with me, too, in the past couple of years in Florida, in fact, and got Marlowe territory a little bit. I'm not doing snake studies there, but I was over there for other reasons, and his buddy Ron Roseman was with me over there, and the snake situation. I don't like snakes. That's pretty obvious. You know that myself, and we are togetherness before. I don't like snakes at all, so I learn all I can about them to avoid them. So I can find them, and I respect them, and I don't handle them literally. Well, I'm not the handler of snakes, but I do respect them to the point where I'm not fearful once I see them first. I just stay with them, you know. But one snake I spotted on the Black Rock Desert about 2 months ago was out there. And that's the Black Rocks in Nevada. It's north of Gerlach, the town of Gerlach, a small village, about 95 miles west of Reno, Nevada. And it's the area they used to call the Northern Mystery of the Spanish explorers because the rivers went underground north of there in the Idaho Territory of now today, where that would be that, and Michael Ross River and so on. And then the big mountain ranges were inhospitable and they were so formidable, they didn't want to traverse. They were afraid of it because of the fear of what the desert had to offer. It was just awful. And then in Fremont, the explorer early times in the 1800s, wrote in his journal, words to effect, you know, paraphrase, he said that it was so formidable, so desolate, so barren, so awful to look at, he did not dare enter for any reason. And that was the area of the Black Rock Desert, Smoke Pit Desert, adjacent on the California border, up toward the town of Lakeview, probably, which would be this place for a bearing, along the area where today is Eagleville and Cedarville, California, on the border of Nevada. It's a very vast area. It's unbelievable how big it goes into the Hawaii parks, Great Lakes National Park, and also to the Hawaii Range in Idaho, Hawaii, still that hole, goes into the southern Idaho territory and parts of Oregon there. It's literally an area that people don't realize what's vast territory is still left in North America that hasn't been traversed very much, and some of it not at all. And it is, since the BLM's put fences up around everywhere, it's, your territory is more isolated than ever, and the creatures, so to be, so to speak, at where they want to be, they've got more territory than ever before to roam wild in, because most people, they don't go past the football. You know, I mean, they just don't go past the four-wheeler. So there's a lot of territory you can't go into anymore, as you could before, even. And it's getting to be a real picture, like Tom and pointed my out there, that it's no joke there on the increase of unknown species out there. Now, I'm not a herpetologist, per se. I'm doing reptilian studies for my own reasons and aquatic animals with the Sasquatch efforts, and it kind of correlates in some respects to the food chain. But anyway, the what I'm looking for is I didn't know Tom had that in mind, but the species that I'm looking for is these so-called hybrids, and I don't know if they exist or not, you know, mutations of snakes. A lot of stories out there about that. Some movies have been made about it, even. But with this interest I've got right now, I was looking for the Mojave Greens out there, and you can't kill them. There's just a lot of kill snakes in Arizona, Mojave Greens, and Utah Territory, other places. Well, that's probably a good thing, but they are very aggressive at times. They're like you're compared to a water moccasin in a ferocity on the desert mountains. And the other snakes, like sidewinders, can be that way too. And, you know, people don't understand snakes sometimes, why they're aggressive, and it's not always because they want to take you on. Sometimes because they have to get in the shade. Being cold-blooded creatures, you're in the shade and they're not getting enough shade, they have to go there to cool off. They'll die at a certain point in not too long a time in direct sunlight if it's over 85 degrees. And so I'm not the last word on snakes, but there are a lot of things to learn. I don't know very much yet. I've been on to them most of my life, here and there and everywhere, but like I say, to avoid them most more than to find them. And so when finding them, you also avoid them afterwards. You know where they are at. And in Montana,
you know, let me ask you this. So I've had a lot of people email me lately, as a matter of fact, and they says, you know, we saw Don Monroe in Bigfoot Lives, the movie, and he was there with you guys when you went in Texas and saw some of the best prints we've ever seen in our life. Can he talk about that? Would you be kind enough to do that?
Yeah, I could do that. Becky Sawyer from New York and was with me on several discoveries we made, and she made one there that was incredible, and maybe Tom will give her credit for running the show. I never heard of it. I don't listen to so much, any shows. But she found the first child prints I've seen in the Southwest, or in the southern states, with the mother alongside, and we filmed these, and Tom did too, and she was the one that I give credit for finding those. She was about 10 steps ahead of me that day in the swamps. And yeah, we've cast a lot of different casts down there in over those weeks and times, and all in Minnesota, in fact, all around the Texarkana country. But by and large, the tracks down there were, as Tom knows, the toes spread more than ones in the Northwest, where I get a lot more spread because of the mud, probably. When your foot goes in the mud, repeatedly over a lifetime, your toes begin to spread. It's just one thing that happens to them because they have to go with the flow, with the mud and the material between their toes. It's called that. And it does happen. So Dad's, a lot of his toes were kind of apart, and they're different than my casts. I've taken the numbers I have, and I related to them differently because I had to get that down in my own mind. I had to understand the differences of the ones in the Northwest or in lava beds and up in the inner mountain west there, as people know who live there. No, it's very rough and awful bad terrain, and most tracks you get have broken toes or terrible feet or something in the case of their hard life. And so swamp casts, as Tom took a lot of them, were more in that kind of a setting of looking at appearance of having spread toes. But I had to get used to the idea of being Northwestern more than a southern swamper. But
wait a minute, Don. Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt. There's a question that just came through from in the chat room from Bill Green. Bill wants to know, where are you investigating, or are you investigating anything new on the creature?
Yeah, I am. Well, it's not really new because it's old stuff, repetitious, but it's also narrowing down the ground. I mean, I found out that since we have a lot of road closures in the country, that they're more spread than ever where they want to go. They can do it. They realize in a short time that they aren't being, collected into groups and driven in like cattle. They can go where they want to more freely. So I repetitiously go around the state. Well, it's quite a large area. I cover lots of Washington, Oregon, Nevada, and Idaho, Montana, parts of California, and in the central states over around Arizona, and even as far as Mexico. But it's in a circle. This very year, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised to tell you how far I've been. I didn't plan to leave home more than 2 weeks. I've been home about 2 weeks the whole year. But I've been as far as Arizona. We planned in the winter, back in January, Gene Shever from Havasu City and I, Arizona, climbed the mountain Hayden up there behind the Kingman in the snow, and I found where I have two pictures of a winter hubble where they've spent the night and tracks around there. That's just one example, and it's in a relatively urban area of mountain range, you might say, but it's still wild back in there. It goes a long ways beyond there south and all the way down into the deserts of Arizona, and there's definitely creatures in there too, and timber and all kind of food, and the way of deer and small game, and there's no reason why they can't live anywhere the elk and deer can live. They also subside on berries and like food, and so anywhere you find bears and you find deer and you find elk and like animals, antelope and so on, you can find anything like that that could be sustained a bipedal type creature, as we call Sasquatch, referred to that way. I call Wild Man. And I don't like the word Bigfoot myself. It, of course, it's coined a phrase, but it's not Harriet Anderson's by any means. It's not that. And I don't know why you can't get that across to people who say, I never see one. I go in the woods, they don't go in the woods past the park, most of them. But the thing is, not to put them down, but the world don't realize anymore how much wild country there is out here. It's incredibly out there. And they say, well, people in the satellites can floor from there. They can't really. They can take pictures, sure, but they don't go down in the very ground in the caves or in the crevices and find stumps. And you can walk in your yard and hide from yourself if you want to. Somebody in your family can hide in seconds behind that stump, and you can't even see them. And that's if they were not planned to hide, even they could lay there and you wouldn't even see if they're sleeping out there. So it isn't hard to hide. I mean, they aren't hiding from us. They have a lifestyle that is their own way of life. They doesn't need us, so we're not included, and that's what it is. I'm not hiding from us. Their lifestyle is secretive and is cool.
And that's the whole problem.
Hey, Don, I agree with you totally that, people don't realize the vastness of areas throughout this country, because you know what happens. They're looking at a computer. That's what they're all about.
California alone, people don't know this, California State. I'm not a Californian, but I've been there a lot, in and out, and out the mountain ranges. There's over 110 mountains in California, and you can get this on your computer and find it, I'm sure you can. At least 110 mountains in California that are over 10,000 feet high. And then most of those have snow on them a lot of the year, and it's a long chain. The ice age is not over in that respect. And you take the run from all down from Death Valley, up north of Barstow there, and go clear across up to the first mountain of the Cascade Range was up to Mount Shasta, the first mountain in the Cascade Range is that one. And you go down that whole rip and go inland to Nevada, you'd be surprised that there's 110 mountains in California over 10,000 feet high.
Yeah, you know what, Don, you're exactly right. Hold on for a second. I want to answer a couple of these questions for the people in the chat room. And they're primarily coming from this kid, Johnny Paulson. Ernest Montiel is dead, Johnny Paulson, and I'm sorry that we're putting you to sleep and you think that my guests are on medication. So maybe why don't we have you on our show and we'll talk about your endeavors and what contributions you've made to the Bigfoot research game here and see how informative you are to the world. Instead of criticizing, sometimes it's better to listen and learn. Now, if you want to come on, I'll give you equal time. I'll give you equal time tonight if you've got the balls enough to come on. Go ahead, Don. I don't like
it. Who is this Johnny guy again? Johnny who?
Johnny Paulson. He's a young kid. He thinks he knows more than the guys that have been out there like you and I.
Well, give the guy one bit of credit. He's got enough sand to speak out, say something. I've turned guys around. That's been really hard to do. I don't try to. I don't try to tell a person anything they don't want to know. But sometimes young guys like that can be turned around.
Well, good.
Stick it by the nap of the neck and stick their nose into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Pardon me?
Why don't you invite him out on your next trek?
No, I don't want nobody that around. He might get himself all killed. people like that. Yeah, you can't have a pedicure with you. Penny waste or pedicure, you know.
I understand.
No, I got these guys, you know, I tell you what, I fire myself sometimes. I fire myself, literally do that. I go out to certain places and I think I'm too tired or ready to see things. Get back to camp. You know, you're fired. You're doing it wrong. So, you know, you can't take someone in the woods and teach them anything. They got to want to learn.
Oh, of course.
They want to learn. They will learn, and they'll ask the right questions, but they should follow the leader. In this case, if you think you are the leader, until they can take over for you, and you follow them, it can happen, but not likely. And they, like Scott Morrow brought up there tonight, it takes a lot of years to get where you think you're good enough to be good enough. And we don't know for sure we've ever made it or not until we get the real article down when they look at it.
You're talking about the real article. What do you think about this hand of of unknown?
Well, that's the one I discovered back in 2003. I didn't discover it, but yeah, I did. But the way it was brought to me and through the police departments in Montana. But anyway, I've always maintained, and I have the original X-rays, and I brought in, even at that time, with the no help of Jeff Meldrum, who was pseudo know-it-all and still might be that, but he also has expertise of a certain kind. I'm surprised he didn't take left off of the better than he did with me. But he first told me he was not any way a bear. And I brought in bear paws being a bear hunter before that. I spent many years hunting bears in Idaho and Montana ranges. And not to be not bragging, but I took a lot of bears, a lot of client people. And I had to trade the hands of the Chinese, the paws, for in those days you could do that. For dinners in Seattle, I used to do this kind of thing. Well, anyway, not important. But I brought in some bear paws for comparables and x-rays to compare to the ones that they took originally that Dr. Reese up there in Idaho took in his laboratory, and we got those still in a safe and high place. And of course, you carried it around a long time, Tom, and I gave you my blessings on that when you did it. Now it's vanished in the sense that someone's got it, and it's not being returned to me, and I'm trying to get it back, and you're trying to help, and you, of course, have to get it back to me according to contract, and I'm not pushing for it, but you went ahead and did the right thing by going ahead and doing what I said, to go ahead and put it where you wanted to get an assay analyzed figured out. Well, it hasn't happened except it's now a bear, but it's not a bear officially, but it's been a bear sanctioned by many people, and they haven't taken a look at it in every possible way, I'm sure, to find this out that it's not a bear. The fingertips were all cut off originally, and Captain Miller of the police force at the time, retired now, and he thought that was also like I did. He went to his forensics and all around, and there were places in the hospitals and radiology and so on. I couldn't find a thing about this being a bear, but he did find the fingertips cut off, and I thought fingerprints were cut off. Fingertips were cut because they took off the fingerprints. So human-like in looks, probably as frightened them to death. And the one thing no one seems to realize about that hand, I'm not sure it's ever brought out on your program or otherwise, but it was skinned so very, very well. Only a surgeon or a very good trapper, a very good skinner could have done that. A person with expertise with a scalpel and nearly ability. I've skinned many of an animal's young man in a trapper like I was there in those days, and you'd be very careful on certain things. And this was skinned so very well, the flesh and bones were just, it was immaculately done. It was just almost incredible. And I think today, yeah, it's got some kind of credence, and if the right people look at it the right way, the anatomy of the hand alone, if you look at it closely, and any kind of knowledge of anatomy of wild game, and human compared, you'll see a difference in bears. It's really, it's just, you say, that's all there is to it. Yeah, and it's got no doubt in my mind it's likely something we don't have on any kind of zoology book or list. And I hope to find, I think I have found cash to match it. I took one down to Captain Miller at the time, and on the phone I got a description, went 200 miles with my cast in a suitcase, an old suitcase I had there, and threw it on the table, and we dug down the cooler, and his, and he got red in the face because he said, where'd you get this, where do you know what I had? I didn't know what he had, but the cast was so close to it. I said, well, it's just what you just described, and the cast size and everything else considered, and the overall take, you know, it's just about ironic that I had the same thing. I was also surprised that he had what I had, I thought, you know, at the time. It wasn't too long afterwards. I took it around about 2 or 3 years around the West Coast, and it went up and down from Vancouver, Canada to Vancouver, Washington, all the way down to Los Angeles, to every kind of hospital, every kind of place. No one put their name on it. The zoos and zoo, I always say they wouldn't put their name on it, but they all did say it's not a bear, as far as I know, but it might be a bear and so on. But they never did say, they said it's very strange and all this, very strange and so on. And so, of course, when you come along finally, and we've got to get it on that hand, and you had it after that till now, and now it's gone into a lockup, call it that, it might be. And I've done off what I can to get it back without getting, into the political part of the big footing, which I don't like, and no time for that. But I got to get into it, apparently, to get it back. It might have some very important significance with this latest documentary out there about the ancient aliens. You might have seen it done recently by some of these bigger people in the world of anthropology and anatomy people in Nevada. They showed on there some skulls in the museum at Winnemucca, and they showed three. And here's what I want to tell you. I did this on my own show with a while back here with M.K. Davis. So I put out the point that I challenge the people, the listeners, to please find out for me what happened. The fourth skull was there 6 months ago. I made a regular series of investigations of those skulls for many years because I had reasons. So they're covert in my own kind of way, but I know a lot more about them than I think a lot of people do. And I went back there with Pansy V, the curator, many times. They see my friends down in the basement. Well, now they show them on his documentary, three skulls, one's missing. And I don't know what happened to it, but I got suspect that some academic threw some horse's ass at Cassius on his collection of horses. And he's going to put it up on a pedestal with some kind of a feather in his cap someday with some kind of a, disclaimer, what you want to, what is not, what isn't. But I know that this skull is missing, and at least in that movie. And you can get the copy. I've got it at home in my
house. I've seen the one they're talking about, and I know exactly. Yeah. What you're talking about, Don.
And listen, they're bringing these skulls out to be something they're not. These are Sitka. I mean, that's my statement, and I'm not the last word on it. But you want to know more about these, and maybe they won't like to hear this, but you go down to Berkeley, California, they won't let you see them. They're in the basement, and they're the same thing, and they're down there in numbers. Now, they're going to say to me, how do you know? Well, I happen to know. And they won't let you go down and see them, but there's people who know this. And it's very embarrassing that this goes back a long ways. And we brought up on our show about hard liquor. That's why I say his name's not spelled that way, but in the last century, the 19th century, the last 20th century, first part of it, who was a man. He was the one that's instrumental in desecrating Indian graves from Alaska to Siberia all the way down to here, and all the things the Smithsonian has done, which I'm not in favor of that myself at all. The Smithsonian is an institution as good as it is.
Oh, Don, Don, hold on. You know, you just talked about the desecration of Indian graves. I were there in Texas when we uncovered that skeleton. And then
you can't tell too much about it on here even now. People don't want to hear it, and they aren't supposed to hear it, I guess.
Well, you know the story.
I know the story.
Somebody desecrated the Indian burial grave. You were there.
I didn't remember this.
Anything.
Remember, I was filming for you. I took your camera for you and did your pictures for you.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is absurd. It's ludicrous. Anyhow, listen, we got a lot more show, Don. And I ran.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Well,
that's
thanks
okay.
For your time.
Just mute yourself out, and we're going to pray for your long-lost friend there, and maybe she can... There's still hope for her, okay?
Yeah, there. Okay. Thank you very much, and God bless you all.
God bless you. Good friend of mine, Don Monroe, ladies and gentlemen. Man travels a lot of miles, not afraid to get out there amongst the elements. Gee, we're running late. Let's get up there to Montana where I'm at up here. Let's talk to my brother, Bruce. Bruce, how are you?
Good, Tom. How are you?
Well, I'm happy. I'm talking to some of the older guys that... been on expedition with me and really knows the business and the people that I really love and endure, and they've been out there and they know what it's all about. But you know what? I want you on today to tell everybody about that sweet honeypot area that we found. You and Donna and Ed, talk about it.
Hey,
don't tell them where it's at, though.
Huh?
Don't tell them where it's at. Just tell them about it.
Oh, I won't tell them where it's at. About 50 years ago, these things were here, and I didn't know it. But I found this out last year, that this family, it lives here, and it's always been here. And I know where it is, And me and the family, only me and my family, Donna and the two kids. Matter of fact, we went up last week and we got a whistle from it. But it seems like the only time it'll whistle at us is when we're leaving. So it must know when we come up and it don't show itself or anything, but when we're leaving, it seems like it says goodbye. And every time we've went up, we've had an encounter. One time he was shaking the trees, shook them for about 5 minutes, and until we went out of sight. Another time, when I hurt myself, coming back off the mountain, and he started whistling at us again. He whistled maybe 4 or 5 times. We came off the mountain, but every time we go up there, we have an encounter. Another time, he heard the family. It was down in the trees. Sound like a bunch of unknown animals kind of making noise back and forth to each other. I kind of dismissed it, but then I kept thinking about it, and I know it wasn't no coyotes or anything like that, but every time we go up there, it's incredible. I'm just waiting for somebody to take back up there that knows they're doing, you know. I know exactly where it's at. I'm the only one that knows. One other guy that knows, the guy that told me.
You know, Bruce, I want to clear up a little something right now, if I can. Everybody thinks that they can go out to areas that we've cultivated over the years and we've bonded with the people. What do you want to tell the people out there that come up here to Montana and use my name and say, hey, the Bigfoot Hunter sent me and we'd like to meet the guys and have them take us out? What do you want to tell those people?
I want to tell them, why don't you come up and talk to me? If you want to find a Bigfoot, I know where there's one. And if you want to pay me for it, give me the money first, and I'll lead you in the other direction.
I don't think the people really understood what you said. Can you give it in layman's terms?
Yeah. Don't mess with us.
Thank you, Bill. Bill, excuse me. Thank you, Bruce. That means an awful lot to me. Listen. I'm running so late, and, you know, we had so many calls about the Nibiru, and we've got a John. He's still waiting on the line. God bless him. We'll have him back next week, but I'm going to give him a few minutes here because the show has been running late. Kiss Donna and the kids, and we'll talk tomorrow. Bye-bye.
God bless you, Tom. And
God bless you, too, man. You know what? That's what family, and that's what brothers in the pursuit of the truth alike. We don't care about the bullshit. We just want the real deal. Thank you for your loyalty, brother.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my brother for a long time, 7 years now, him and his family, and he's been good to us up here. I'm so sorry. John, are you out there in Mississippi?
Yeah, yet to hate it. Bruce, I was out in your backyard coming up out of the Kalispell in Kalispell, Montana. I clipped the backside of the mountains. Came right up in your backyard. Hope you didn't see me that day. I know that's the attitude out there, but
you bet it is. And you know, it's amazing how they think that, you know, that they can just come up there and throw around somebody's name and that they think that they're going to break bread with these people. It's not gonna happen.
Those people are my kind of people. I got to tell you, I was there. I met those folks. They're my kind of people.
Yeah. Listen, John, we only have a few minutes here, but I'd like to close out with you, and we'll bring you back next week, and please forgive me. We'll start off with you.
I see how it went, Tom.
My gosh, we had a bevy of emails and calls from people like you won't believe.
Well, okay? You know, I really want to say the right thing, and the right thing for me is I just want to thank my Father in heaven for giving me the opportunity that people are hearing it, because, I mean, we're talking about something extremely vital, aren't we?
Big time. Big time. You know, I get now every time I see something on the boob tube, or I hear it on the news or the radio about storms coming and everything else. As a matter of fact, even as late as today, and I guess maybe the movie was made about the Nibiru. I don't know.
Well, there's so many, you know, instances where Hollywood has been. I don't know how it works like this. I'm not an expert like all of your experts you've had on tonight and all these years of this. I'm really just a common man out here. But the thing is, I don't know how it's coming together with these movies, you know, over time, like 2001, and then they had the offshoot of that, 2010. You know, those movies are just, they seem to have been sort of seeding us as a society to, you know, to ready ourselves. I was talking to a young girl in a town down, you know, near Memphis, you know, the thing is, you know, that generation has been, you know, soaked in all of these movies that are coming out to prepare themselves for some kind of world event where society just goes, you know, off the hook in panic, and how the government's involved, and, you know, all of these scenarios that movies are being created. It's just amazing to me how, you know, out there in that higher realm of society where the principalities and powers exist, they've known about this. And you know, why play the game of, you know, going through Hollywood? Why not just come right out and tell the people, you know, all this money that went into highways, you know, highways to nowhere, et cetera, those kinds of things. You know, why weren't they put into, you know, major constructions towards shelters that could have housed, you know, more people and so forth? I don't know. It's just a whole other aspect of this thing that, you know, where I've been kind of bathed in the last week. But, no, I'm glad that at least that term has gotten out. Nibiru, please, you know, folks, look it up for yourself. You know, I hate even being put in a position where I've got to tell people what it's about. I'd rather, even in my own case, you know, tell me the word, let me look it up myself, convince myself. I don't, you know, and it's just better for you to have experienced something through your own, you know, research. You know, same thing like you're talking about, not to get off the topic of Nibiru, but, you know, like these folks who have seen these creatures, you know, we can talk to a blue in the face, you know, until they have some kind of investigation about it, you know, look at the evidence, et cetera, or having been in that, you know, witness themselves, you know, and that's what I'm running into out here, too. You know, folks just aren't hearing about this, and so they don't know how to take it. So I'm just glad that there's some avenue, and like I said, I did give thanks to my Father in heaven for having an opportunity to get it out there.
Well, you know what? As we're talking about our Father in heaven and thanking him, we're going to put the close on the show. We'll open up with next week. I want to say hello to Adair, Dave, Chris, Mandy, and Andrew. I want to say hello to Dr. Watson, Flycatcher, Gentle Giant. I love you, man. Gerald, Johnny Paulson, I still love you. Kenny from PA. Logan, Mount Mononok, Rex Howdysail, my son, Tex Lone Star, and a couple of guests, and Mr. Security, Laren, I love you guys. Till next time, America. And by the way, good night, Miss Calabash, wherever you are. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. driving determination. The only key they had to unlock the door.